This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, May 9th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The 9th annual West Fork Watershed Cleanup is May 17th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. with check-in at Riverside Park in downtown West Fork. Volunteers are needed and lunch will be provided. The West Fork watershed flows to Beaver Lake, which is used as the primary drinking water source for more than 400,000 people. You drink it every day. Registration and information available through the Beaver Watershed Alliance at 274-8903 or bwdh20.org.
The 5th annual Singing for Spays picnic to benefit Spay, Arkansas will be May 17th from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. at Dog Party USA. Tickets will be available at the door. Barbecue with all of the fixings, refreshments, and live music will be offered. More information available at spayarkansas.org or on Facebook at Spay Arkansas.
Ahead on Ozarks, Kyle talks to Michael Tilley about a new owner for some long-abandoned real estate in Fort Smith and the official announcement of a Whole Foods in Fayetteville.
First, a $125,000 contribution from ExxonMobil yesterday marks the launch of the Faulkner County Disaster Recovery Fund. The fund, created by the Arkansas Community Foundation, is focused on long-term recovery efforts rather than immediate relief projects. Heather Larkin, the foundation's president, says past experience will shape how grants are distributed.
In the spring of 2007, we administered a similar fund in Dumas that over the following 24 months made grants for recovery and rebuilding. That experience taught us a lot and crystallized what we all in this room already know. The needs of those communities affected on the 27th will not end with food, water, and shelter in the immediate short term.
The nonprofit is accepting grant applications and selecting local community members to be on a committee in charge of awarding funds.
Two Arkansas lawmakers who have been opposed to the state's private option say they'll ask a legislative committee in June to authorize another analysis of the program's financial impact. Republican State Senator Brian King of Green Forest says the private option, which uses federal Medicaid money to buy private insurance for low-income Arkansans, is on track to cost the state significantly more than has been projected.
If you get close to $200 million over budget on this, when the 10% kicks in, which may actually be 30%, we don't know what that's going to be, they're already from their original estimates, could be that $10 to $20 million are going to have to come out of our general revenue, and that's going to impact our state later on, which in turn is going to impact how we fund schools, colleges, universities, and create a better tax environment.
Another GOP state representative, Joe Farr from Lone Oak County, says the estimates produced for the state underestimate the cost per person.
Optimist, again, guessed at another number, $477 a month budget neutrality. We are $3 million a month over what they guessed then. Again, we're going to ask for a private independent firm to come back, renew these numbers, redo them, see what our actual costs are. If we continue what we're doing right now, we'll be over $21 billion, their estimated guess.
State health officials say they expect costs to decrease in the near future and the federal government, not the state, to pay for any additional costs. More than 127,000 Arkansans are enrolled in the program.
Tomorrow, the National Association of Letter Carriers will hold its annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, which last year collected 74 million pounds of food nationwide. To participate, people are asked to leave non-perishable food items next to their mailboxes in the morning so their letter carrier can pick it up during his or her route. Rhonda Sanders, CEO of the Arkansas Food Bank, says the country's largest single-day food drive comes at a critical time of year.
When we get to May, a lot of the donations and things that we have had are really running out, and we know that we're being faced with summer. And summer means that there are a lot of kids that are at home that normally would have been fed, you know, at school. And now they're sitting at home, and their families run short on food.
Arkansas is top in the nation for food insecurity, with over 500,000 people estimated to be living in hunger.
The League of American Cyclists ranks Arkansas as the 38th most friendly state toward bicycles. Last year, the state was ranked 37th, and although this year's ranking is slightly lower, the league recognized some advancement in making Arkansas more bicycle friendly. Specifically, Arkansas improves slightly in implementation of bicycle friendly policies and programs, and in evaluation and planning of bicycle related initiatives in the state.
Remediation of the former C&L landfill on Cato Springs Road in Fayetteville is underway. According to the City of Fayetteville, the remediation of the site is expected to be completed by the end of the year, but in the coming weeks, large trucks are expected to haul material into the site using Judge Cummings Road. The city and the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, which is overseeing the remediation project, urge residents to use caution in the area while the project continues.
SFC Fluidics, a company based at the Arkansas Research and Technology Park in Fayetteville, recently closed a successful investment push. The company secured $2 million in its second investment round. That money will go toward commercializing a new disposable insulin patch pump, which is smaller than any pump on the market. According to the CityWire, SFC Fluidics will start clinical studies next year to demonstrate the pump's effectiveness, and the device is expected to be ready for the market in 2016.
Although he was originally scheduled to address graduating University of Arkansas students and receive an honorary Doctor of Laws degree, Governor Mike Beebe will not be at the university's commencement ceremony tomorrow. According to the university, the governor will be at a family funeral in northeast Arkansas tomorrow morning. Anita Huffington, a nationally known sculptor who's lived in northwest Arkansas since 1977, will receive an honorary Doctor of Fine Arts degree, and she'll address students during the commencement.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell at home last night to the Springfield Cardinals 11-2. The loss puts the Naturals at 11-22 on the season. Play continues tonight in Springdale.
Speaking of tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 50s in northwest Arkansas, lower to mid-60s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, cloudy, 30% chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms, highs in the mid to upper 80s. And for Saturday night, cloudy, slight chance of showers, about a 20% chance, lows will be in the upper 60s. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers news, business, politics, sports, and much more for the entire region. Michael, happy Friday to you.
Well, happy Friday to you as well. Hope we can all stay dry today.
Yes. Well, let's talk first about a sale that happened or appears to have happened in Fort Smith involving some of the old Whirlpool property.
Right. About half the property, about a 620,000 square foot distribution facility, which is a large facility in anybody's book, that sits on that manufacturing complex that Whirlpool operated in Fort Smith, that is in the process of being sold to Spartan Logistics out of Columbus, Ohio. Spartan's an interesting company. It's not just logistics, but it's almost kind of a soup to nuts. If Kyle Kellums had something that he wanted to manufacture and store and then distribute, you know, you could go to them and they could kind of almost manage all of that for you. So that's what they do. They're going to use that facility for that, and it could employ as many as 200 jobs. And, you know, Kyle, that's not going to get us back to those 4,500 jobs, those 4,500 good-paying union member jobs, but it's a start. And what it shows is several things. One, that property can be productive again, that there is interest in that property, and there's interest not just locally from local developers, but from a company that operates nationwide. And it also reduces Whirlpool's ownership assets in Fort Smith, and that's important because, you know, Whirlpool obviously for a long time was a good actor. They were good for the economy, but, you know, they didn't leave on a good note. And so I think it's important to get as much of that property out from under the Whirlpool control, so that it may be so that economic developers in Fort Smith and around the state may have some more flexibility in how they put the rest of the property to use.
And I think there had been some concern whether someone would be interested in this property at all.
Well, yes, you know, with the pollution problem. Now, this facility is on the other side of where the pollution problem is, but we need to keep in mind that no matter who will own the property above the ground level, Whirlpool for the near future and who knows how long is going to always own that ground underneath, the pollution or whatever underneath. So Whirlpool can sell that property if they want, but they still cannot sell their liability in terms of pollution mitigation and cleanup. So, but again, you know, toward that pollution point, that's why it was good that this happened. I mean, it shows that it's not that people are interested and that it can be put back to use. So let's hope this is just kind of the a start to what will come in the next few years.
Well, in other business location news, it's going to be a Whole Foods in Northwest Arkansas. This has been rumored and discussed for, it seems, a decade. Now it's going to happen.
Yes, well, now it's going to, and you're right, it's been, you know, a lot of anticipation. And, you know, Whole Foods would, you know, it's funny, they wouldn't confirm, but, you know, right there in the Planning Commission, the Fayetteville Planning Commission documents, it was, you know, this structure and everything that magically fit with a Whole Foods. But finally, in a earnings report the company released on Tuesday, you know, they admitted, yeah, we're, you know, Fayetteville is there and we're moving in, and the city is expected to put in a stoplight near that area. But it will be interesting. I think Fayetteville is a great place for a Whole Foods market. And what's interesting, though, is it's Whole Foods has had some trouble lately. They're, you know, the stock market is a little, I wouldn't say gun shy, but they're a little concerned about Whole Foods because, you know, as Whole Foods proved that their organic model or their different model to providing grocery was success, now we see people like Walmart and Target and Publix and HEB and these other large grocery chains are trying to get into the Whole Foods business, and some folks are concerned that it may cut into that business. But I mean, that's a story for future quarterly earnings. But yeah, for in terms of Whole Foods, and you know, I think for people in Fort Smith or around the area, it's going to be exciting because, you know, there's that type of new unique grocery store within driving distance. So I think it'll be good for the entire region.
You mentioned groceries and driving. Walmart is going to construct their first pickup center where you send in what you want and they'll put it together ready for you and you just drive up and they give it to you.
Yes, and this is, Kyle, I know it may be at great risk of putting too much importance on this. You know, this is not just a little 15,000 square foot facility. You know, the retail world is going to be watching this. I can tell you from the traffic we've had on the CityWire, it's just been off the charts whenever we've posted some of these stories about these Walmart experiments. And this one has really driven traffic. And it's across between a Sonic and one of those automated car washes where you've ordered ahead and you probably have a number. You pull up, you give that number to one of the associates, you drive to another little spot, they bring your groceries out, you drive on. You're not getting out of the car, or theoretically you're not getting out of the vehicle. And, you know, where the retail world is going is trying to figure out how to provide that convenience. And what's interesting is the retail world knows that there's not just one way to provide that convenience. You know, the super center concept, the concept that Walmart now largely operates off of is built around those baby boomers and partially, you know, the generation of Michael Tilley and Kyle Kellums, where we just were trained to go to the supercenter and get all our stuff. Well, the millennials and these new generations, you know, they have a different concept. You know, they use their smartphones and tablets and iPads to figure out where to get stuff, how to price shop, how to get it delivered. And they're just blowing up this retail model. They're turning it on its head. And so this will be an interesting experiment. We'll see if it meets Walmart's expectations in what is, even though it's in its own backyard in Bentonville, it's still a smaller metro market. If it meets expectations in this metro market, don't be surprised when they're rolling out hundreds of these over a 3 to 5 year period.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers news, culture, sports, and everything else for this region. Michael, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Kyle.
In about 15 minutes on Ozarks, the conclusion of our conversations with the candidates seeking the major party nominations for governor. Curtis Coleman talks about the private option, income taxes, and creating jobs.
So I'm concerned, and I will tell you genuinely and deeply concerned, that we were using Arkansas taxpayer money to create jobs for people who live in Tennessee and Missouri. And I'm glad for people in Tennessee and Missouri to have jobs. I just don't want to use Arkansas taxpayer money to do that when I think we can do a lot better things with it.
The completion of a series of conversations with people wanting to move into the governor's mansion. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
The band is the Yellow Jackets. I'll feature their music on Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m. I'll also feature music from the Sons of Brazil, Hogtown Hot Club, and Claudia Berson. An entire set of music dedicated to bands you'll be able to hear at the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. At Shades of Jazz here on KUAF 91.3 FM, National Public Radio.
A month ago on Ozarks, we reported about the plight of Marisol Soto, an undocumented Mexican girl who, in 2011, returned to Mexico City, leaving Northwest Arkansas to pursue a college education. But after her life was threatened in Mexico, she risked crossing back over the U.S. border to certain detainment by Homeland Security. Last we heard, she was about to face an immigration judge and possible deportation. However, we've now learned the judge ruled Marisol could return to her family in Arkansas, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich picks up the rest of the story.
7-year-old Marisol Soto and her baby sister Mariana were brought to America by their parents, Andrea and Martin, in 2001. They are undocumented. The family stayed for a while in California before settling in Pea Ridge, Arkansas. Andrea and Martin found plenty of work. The girls enrolled in public school. Marisol graduated Pea Ridge High with excellent grades in pursuit of a career in nursing. But without legal status, she decided to move back to Mexico City, live with her grandmother, get her medical degree, and work until she could be reunited with her family back in Arkansas. The Mexican consulate in Little Rock provided her a return passport in September of 2011. When she arrived, she realized she'd made a big mistake.
I had to do a lot of growing up. I discovered the world is not as nice as I thought.
Marisol says she encountered certain bias.
I got ripped off by 3 different colleges as soon as they seen my diploma from the United States. I got threatened numerous times by classmates.
She said even her extended Mexican family shunned her, perceiving her as privileged and different. She tried to fix things, but spiraled into anxiety and depression, she said. The situation became intolerable last February.
I was attending the Mexican Red Cross school for nursing. I met this girl there, and she was a classmate. She was the mistress of a chapo, which is a head of a drug dealing business. And, you know, as soon as she found out I was from the United States, she stole my ID with all my information. She had, I don't know, bodyguards, if you even call them that, and they were following me to my bus stops. In the phone calls, she would explain to me in lots of detail how she was going to stab me, how I was going to get raped by these 4 men she was always with, and how if that didn't work, she would kidnap me and ask for an amount from my parents.
Throughout her ordeal, she said she kept close contact by cell phone with her family back in Pea Ridge. Her mother, who speaks a little English, managed to find an organization to help her daughter cross the border. Marisol was escorted by members of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, the group's pressing Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform, including the DREAM Act, providing lawful, educated, undocumented youth a path to citizenship by staging border crossings. At the U.S. border, Marisol turned herself in to immigration authorities.
It was a group of us that crossed, over 150 families. No laws were broken. We turned ourselves in to ICE. We were detained in Otay Mesa. And from there, we were sent to CCA San Diego.
That was March 10th. For 6 weeks, she was held in the San Diego Correctional Detention Center in a mixed population.
I had never even had detention in school, so I've never been in trouble. It was hard knowing you were detained with actual inmates, you know, being there sentenced for actual crimes. It was very hard living the schedule you had to live, living the way you had to. And I think the hardest part was waiting and not knowing what was happening.
Her first court date was April 9th. And after numerous delays, she went before an immigration judge. She witnessed a stream of young people before her get deported.
I was terrified. I was shaking. I couldn't breathe. I was having an anxiety attack. She only asked me 3 questions and then approved me. It was done within 10 minutes. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even speak. It was yes, no questions, and I was just nodding my head. I was frozen, and I didn't realize her answer until it was over with.
After she was released, one of the dreamers took Marisol to an airport motel, and she flew back to Arkansas the next day.
And I didn't know who to hug first. I didn't know where to run. I kind of froze, and my mom was the first one to be back in my arms.
This is Mrs. Andrea Soto. Her husband was unable to make the interview because of work.
Me siento completa porque cuando ella no estaba en casa es como si me faltara la mitad de mí.
She says she feels whole, that when I wasn't home, she felt like half of her was missing.
As for Marisol, what is it like to be back home with her family in Pea Ridge?
Oh, it feels amazing. I haven't felt this peaceful in a long time. Just the air smells different. The environment is different. I haven't had any depression or anxiety attacks since I've been back. So life is looking good right now.
Throughout the interview, the word milagro, miracle, was repeated. But the miracle worker is Mariana, Marisol's 14-year-old little sister, who waged a Facebook campaign to draw public and political attention to her sister's plight.
Well, we had a lot of petitions going around on Facebook. We had petitions for signatures to bring her home. We had phone calls made to our senators. And one occasion we met with one of our senators to ask for letters. I went around in the Pea Ridge community and I asked for letters from old teachers Marisol had, from people that knew us, neighbors, churches, community service groups, our police station. There were signatures from Australia, from United Kingdom, from Mexico, around the United States.
Had Marisol stayed in the U.S., she would have discovered that the U of A system and her local community college allow undocumented students to pursue a higher education. And because she left the country, she's no longer eligible to apply for special credentials under President Barack Obama's 2012 initiative known as Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which would allow her to legally work and drive. Still, Marisol Soto is pushing on, enrolling at the community college, working with a local immigration lawyer to help clear her record.
We do consider this place home. We want to progress. We want to help. In my case, I do. I want to go to college. I want to work. I'm bilingual. I can help so much. And I love doing community service. I love helping. I'm not here to harm. I'm here to help.
According to the Immigration Policy Center, an estimated 1.8 million unauthorized immigrant youth could be eligible for provisional legal status. Last count, nearly 522,000 cases were approved. As for Marisol Soto's experience in Mexico, the Post-Deportation Human Rights Project at Boston College has found that many such individuals face significant stigma and discrimination, and especially so when they are visibly Americanized. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, May 9th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
All right.
If you haven't paid attention, Sunday's Mother's Day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And because we always like to swoop in and save you, mm-hmm. We're going to swoop in and save you today. We have a whole selection of events mom might enjoy with her family, and they all fit in a kid's budget because they're all free.
All right.
So today, the Fair on the Square starts in Kingston mm-hmm. with gospel music tonight at 6 o'clock, and I'm sure there'll be food. And then tomorrow from 9 to 3, there's going to be food, arts and crafts, music, a parade at noon, all on the Kingston Square. It's a beautiful drive out there. And, of course, you'll have to spend some money for food, but the event itself is
free.
On Saturday, the Native Tree and Plant Sale happens from 8 to 1 at Compton Gardens in Bentonville. Again, what you spend is up to you, but admission is free. Discover the Grounds happens at 9 o'clock at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville.
Also tomorrow?
Also tomorrow, free with online registration at crystalbridges.org. In Bella Vista, you can go to the library at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and decorate a pot and plant flowers for Mom and then create a Mother's Day card.
That's fun.
It's called Blossoms and Bows, and it is, of course, free. Tomorrow is Heritage Day from 10 to 4 at Ozark Folkways in Winslow.
Mm-hmm. Cornbread.
Cornbread. Spinning, rug hooking, basket making, quilting, a silent auction, and food, and...
free.
Correct. There is a Red Star Rounders concert at 10:30 tomorrow at the Fayetteville Public Library, also free for families. And it's Second Saturday Music in the Park tomorrow with blues guitarist, I wish I could talk, Bob Margolin, from 5 to 7 at Basin Spring Park in Eureka Springs.
That, too, is free.
Exactly. On Sunday, we're not done yet.
The actual Mother's Day.
It's Terra Music Fest at Terra Studios, east of Fayetteville. It starts at noon, and there's all sorts of music. Fernando Valencia, New Highway, Heirloom, my current favorite band. Mm-hmm. Jesse Dean and Candy Lee. Admission is free, but they're accepting donations for an organization called Using Art to Create a Better World. And at 4:30 on Sunday, Mother Goes to the Movies. Women, Art, and Film with Tyson scholar Catherine Manthorn at 4:30 at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville.
How much is that?
Free with online registration.
Sounds great.
How can you miss?
You can't. All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
Support for KUAF also comes from Today's Bank, announcing its new branch in Fiesta Square at 2971 North College and their branch at 300 North College in Fayetteville. Also serving Huntsville with two locations. Today's Bank, full-service banking, helping today's dreams become tomorrow's reality. Member FDIC.
This is Ozarks at Large. This week, we've heard from both candidates seeking the Democratic nominee for governor. And yesterday, we heard from Republican primary gubernatorial candidate Asa Hutchinson. It's all part of an ongoing series of interviews with candidates in contested races. Libertarian Frank Gilbert and the Green Party's Joshua Drake already have their party nominations wrapped up. Today, we'll have a discussion with Curtis Coleman. The former Safe Foods CEO faces Hutchinson in this month's GOP primary for governor. He recently talked with Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock.
What are your feelings on state investment in super projects, particularly Big River Steel?
You know, I'd support it, and I'm glad that Big River Steel is being built in Arkansas. Let me say that first of all, and I think it's great for the economy of Mississippi County and also Osceola. My objection was the use of $125 million, $130 million of taxpayer money, mainly because, and almost entirely because of the location. Because there's another steel company in Mississippi County. In fact, Mississippi County is now the second largest steel producing county in North America, right here in Arkansas. A lot of people don't know that. But I had the privilege of going through one of Nucor Steel's plants, and they let me talk to any employee in the plant that I wanted to, and which I thoroughly enjoyed. I asked all the employees I talked to a lot of questions, but the two I asked were, are you from Arkansas and do you live in Arkansas? And out of about two dozen, so not a scientific poll at all, but out of two dozen or so that I talked to, nobody that I talked to lived in Arkansas. They all lived in western Tennessee and southeast Missouri. And when I pursued that farther, it's because they can keep more of the money they make if they don't live in Arkansas. So I'm concerned, and I will tell you genuinely and deeply concerned, that we were using Arkansas taxpayer money to create jobs for people who live in Tennessee and Missouri. And I'm glad for people in Tennessee and Missouri to have jobs. I just don't want to use Arkansas taxpayer money to do that when I think we can do a lot better things with it.
Arkansas's current tax structure has lower income residents paying a higher percentage of their income than wealthier residents. Can you detail your tax plan and how you might make up the differences to balance the state budget?
My tax plan has two components. One is a tax cut, and it began with my interest in running for governor at all. And I began to study the economy of Arkansas compared to the economy of our neighboring states. And what I discovered was that compared to almost all of our neighboring states, we're doing pretty poorly. In fact, we're 49th in the nation in median household income. To translate that differently, if you live in almost any state with which Arkansas shares a border and you just make the median household income, you make $138 a week more if you live in one of our neighboring states than if you live in Arkansas. And that's frustrating and, in my opinion, unnecessary. So two things I did. One with my tax policy. One is let's start being more competitive by reducing the state income taxes paid by every Arkansan. And so what I did was is that I applied a formula that maintains the same amount of drop for taxpayers, so those at the lowest bracket, actually, by the time my tax plan is fully executed, will be paying zero taxes. And but fundamentally, we're going to drop. If I'm allowed to be governor for 8 years, we're going to cut your state income taxes every year for 8 consecutive years. The other side of my plan, if you look at it carefully, is how we're going to compensate for the loss in state revenue. And what we do is we do a very aggressive development of small business in Arkansas. Small business creates 60-70% of our jobs. So the plan is a balance. We lower state income taxes while we broaden the tax base. And it's a proven economic model that even John F. Kennedy subscribed to. You know, John F. Kennedy told the Economic Club of New York in December of 1962, our taxes are too high and our revenues are too low. And his remedy was to lower taxes.
Right. Certainly different situation then. I think taxes on the wealthiest bracket were around 90% at that time. And
they were.
They're down
right
in the 30s. But I understand your point. And speaking about some of that population, and at least near the poverty line or at the poverty line or below it, and could you articulate your position on the private option a little bit?
I think Obamacare is going to be a disaster for our health care and for our economy. I also believe that the private option was an extension of Obamacare. I also think that the private option was the most dramatic single expansion of government in Arkansas's history. Fundamentally, I believe, and I think I trace this all the way back to the founders and framers of our country, particularly Thomas Jefferson, that as you expand government, you reduce the liberty of people. And one of the reasons is because you expand government, which is what the private option did, government automatically gets bigger and it costs more. The more government costs, the less we have as individuals to keep and use in our discretion. I believe the private sector could have done a lot better job.
Do you believe the state government, in partnership with the federal government or on its own accord, should in some way act to subsidize health insurance for those people making below 140% of the poverty line?
You know, I will tell you this. I believe that it is legitimate use of state taxpayer funds and federal funds to provide health care and other essentials for people who are genuinely disabled and incapable of taking care and providing for themselves. Everything else, like where the level is, 140% of poverty, is the same kind of discussion that we had a moment ago about what's the fair share for everybody paying taxes. And it's a very it's going to be a discussion you work out. I fundamentally believe it's a legitimate use of taxpayer funds to take care of people who genuinely need the assistance and the help. Working out the details of where that break is going to be a discussion we have as we go forward.
With those people, 150,000 have signed up now, possibly 200,000 by the time of the general election. You would prefer to have some alternative in place for them. But say it comes up for reauthorization on a yearly basis. When you come to that point, would you pull the plug on that program without having the other alternative already in place?
I would not pull the plug on anybody's health care insurance like, in fact, Obamacare has done, in my opinion, without having a legitimate and practical alternative available to people.
That was Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock, talking with Curtis Coleman, one of two candidates seeking the Republican nomination in the primary for Arkansas's gubernatorial race. Primary election day is May 20th. Early voting has already begun throughout Arkansas. Earlier this week, we heard from the two candidates seeking the Democratic nomination, and yesterday we heard from Asa Hutchinson, the other Republican candidate.
And it's time now to give the tickets that we offered yesterday away to our winner.
And what a package it is.
Mm-hmm.
You start off with 4 tickets to see a movie at any Malco movie theater in the area,
mm-hmm.
and there are many. We have 4 tickets to see the Northwest Arkansas Naturals at some point you're choosing.
Mm-hmm. These are all vouchers, so they can be used whenever.
Right. And we also have 4 tickets to see Cinderella Confidential being put on by Trike Theater
this
weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You get them all.
Yep.
Entertain your family all weekend.
Absolutely.
All right. Stephen Farmer, Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Stephen didn't tell us where he's from, but Stephen will be in contact.
The listening area.
So Stephen, you and three friends or 11 friends or however many you want to take to what, we'll get that and we'll be in touch with you to tell you how we'll get the tickets to you.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We've got new music from the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band and Rochelle Koba. Also, Joe Louis Walker, Billy Branch and the Sons of Blues, Floyd Dixon, Muddy Waters, Sean Costello, and more. Again, that's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. Cletus got shot. Doesn't really tour anymore, but every now and then they'll play a show around Fayetteville. Next week, fans will have two chances to see the local trio, once at the Artist Fair celebration and again during the Block Street Block Party. Last week, Mark Landry, Adam Cox, and Nathan Miller stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. To begin our conversation, I asked them a question I had been wondering about for some time. Who is Cletus?
There is no Cletus. Hopefully.
Well, he got shot. I guess he's probably all right.
Or who was Cletus, I guess I should say.
No, Cletus is nothing. We had a good friend of mine, Jacob George, he played with us very early on. He played banjo when we were first picking around. And every time we played, we'd come up with a new name. We did one time we were...
Or the short notice band.
The short notice band, and then another time we were the second coming. The second coming, yeah. And then at one of the times, eventually, was Cletus Got Shot, because he always wanted to have a punk rock band named Cletus Got Shot. And we did that, and that's, for whatever reason, that's the one that stuck, and we couldn't get rid of it.
I wish we'd stuck with The Second Coming.
Yeah.
I still think that was a great band name.
It is an excellent band name.
It's still open for those of
you. It's for sale.
Well, before we started recording, you told me that you accidentally formed this band, and you actually had an exact date.
August 17th is my birthday. It was 2007. Mm-hmm. Don't know how old I was turning, however old I was that year. But I elected to have a birthday party and have like an acoustic picking circle, invited people to bring instruments. And I already knew Nathan. We played music just randomly. And Adam came. He had just started dating Nathan's cousin at that point, and he was brought to the party and told, hey, bring a guitar. And so he got his guitar out and said, I don't know any songs you guys know. I'm like, well, what do you play then? He's like, I have songs I wrote. And so we played them, and that ended up being like the genesis of the band as we know it.
Okay.
And then after that, Mark would just show up. He would come and find me once a week and say, hey, you want to go play downtown? And I said, where you want to go play? And he'd say, we'll find a place.
Yeah. On the sidewalk.
It turned out to be Bomb and Maxine's after a while.
Yeah, yeah. We went to, what's the one across the
Tables
street?
Tables and L.
Tables and L, yeah.
First.
We went to Tables and L first, and we played, just spontaneously walked in and started playing on their patio. And a lot of people, the people that were there called all their friends, and a bunch of people came out. It ended up being a big party. And then the next week, we were like, oh, that went great. We should do it again. And we showed up, and the lady says, oh, I can't let you in. And we asked her why, and she says, well, the owner came in and counted all the till from the night you guys were here, and it was way too much money, I mean, more than normal. And he asked what was going on, why were there so many people there? And she said, oh, there was a band that showed up to play it. And he was furious about it, that a band had just randomly showed up to play. So they wouldn't let us back. Anyways. Yeah. That week, we went to Tables and L to find out we couldn't play, and so we just told everybody that was there, oh, we're going to go across the street to Maxine's. And we went across the street, and the whole bar went with us. You know? Yeah,
again, uninvited.
Yeah.
We just went and said, hey, can we play music in the corner? We're going to. We paid for our own beer. It was all fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
And we ended up getting kicked out of that place after a couple weeks of them making too much money also.
No, that was more than a couple weeks, man. That was
a couple months.
That was a couple months.
Yeah, a couple months. We played once a week. This is back before Maxine's is the Maxine's that it is now.
Right, because it was renovated a few years ago.
Yeah, the first reopening after the fire.
Yeah.
Just reopened, not the current reopening.
Right.
Yeah.
The day of the week that we were coming, like a Tuesday or something like that, and they were having it was cheap pitcher night,
mm-hmm.
$4 pitchers, and that was the reason they asked us to stop playing, because a lot of people started showing up on that night, and everybody was buying pitchers, and they were like, "Look, we're going through bukus of beer, but we're not really making any money, so
selling out of beer."
Yeah.
So at what point did you decide to start asking people if you could play before showing up to play?
I think a lot of it had to do with Nathan had just started dating his wife, mm-hmm. now wife, and she really believed in the band, and we didn't. We're just like, yeah, we'll just show up and hang out.
She was like, I'm going to call somebody and get you guys some gigs.
Yeah, she said, I think you guys could be playing and getting paid. And I'm like, that's crazy. You could do whatever you want. So we went from playing uninvited gigs to playing over 20 gigs a month in like overnight. She's like, hey, I got you some gigs next month. We're like, really? She's like, yeah, we got 23.
Yeah.
And then that's how it started. She just booked us a ton of gigs and we started playing more.
And then it snowballed from there. We're doing like 200 to 250 shows a year. We did that for several years anyways.
And you kind of slowed down. I mean, I think the last time I saw you guys was about almost 2 years ago at Roots Festival.
Actually, we kind of stopped.
Yeah,
right.
We just up and quit there for a little while.
How did that happen, the decision to up and stop? I was being polite by saying slowing down.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you see Adam's little son, you'd understand.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it being a touring musician, a working musician, is not the most lucrative business. Even when you're kind of on the top tier of your subgenre that you're traveling around in, you're still, it's not like you're making bukus of money or anything, you know. You're doing good to pay your bills. But that's when you've made it as a working musician, is when you're able to pay your just regular bills, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we ever made it to that point. Close, maybe. But,
yeah, it's a self-supporting lifestyle. If you like to constantly be on a road trip, you will make enough money unless the van breaks down. But you can make enough money to eat breakfast the next day and drive to another town.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I mean, if you're doing anything beyond that, you're doing well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was times we came home, we broke even. Like, well, I just went on a road trip for a month, and I spent no money, but I also have no money.
Yeah. And then it gets to the point, too, where, you know, you're traveling so much and playing so much that the only way you can live a life with you know, food in your belly and things of that nature is being on the road. Because when you come home, you're broke, you know, and there's nobody's like handing you food or helping you out, you know. Whereas when you're playing on the road, people are constantly, thank God, helping you out, you know.
Yeah, we've been taken care of by people all over the Midwest primarily, but they take us home, let us sleep at their house, feed us food. And this past weekend, we played in Chicago and saw a lot of the people we hadn't seen in a while. And it's actually really rewarding to see. Like, I got hugs from people from probably 15 states. And there are people I haven't seen in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them were people who took care of us. Mm-hmm. Like, took us home, treated us like family. And I'm really grateful for that. I think we all are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys have kind of been dusting off the cobwebs. I know in March, you guys played kind of a surprise show at Smoke and Barrel for the Calamity Cubes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was that just a surprise to us, or did you know that was happening?
We kind of knew it was happening, I guess.
Because you're friends with them.
Not really.
Yeah, that was part of it. Booking shows during the midweek is always difficult, especially if you're a lesser-known band. Mm-hmm. And they were coming to town, and the venue didn't even want to book them because they knew they wouldn't make enough money to pay them. And so we put it into the sweet in the pot. Like, we didn't get paid that night. Mm-hmm. We said, we'll come play and invite everyone we can, and you can give all the money the bar could afford. Mm-hmm. To the Calamity Cubes, mm-hmm. because it was a Wednesday night and they're not from here. It's hard to pull a crowd.
We basically don't play for real anymore. We're a charity gig now, I guess. Apparently.
You're a charity gig?
Yeah.
It's
not so bad. It's not so bad. Did that work out in their favor? Did a lot of people show up because they hadn't seen you guys in a while?
Yeah, I feel like it was
a good crowd, yeah.
I enjoyed it more than going to the bar on the weekend because everyone who was there for the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was crowded enough for the show, but not just, you know, a meat market is crowded with people trying to get drunk and be seen.
Mm-hmm. And then you guys just got back from Chicago. How did, and that was a festival?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Windrunners Festival.
Windrunners Festival.
Again, some of the bands we used to tour and play with, there's a kind of genre scene around that. A lot of people call it the Muddy Roots mm-hmm. scene, named after Muddy Roots Festival in Tennessee. But there's a booker and guy who does a radio show in Chicago who puts together a festival. It's called Moonrunners Fest, and mm-hmm. this is the second year. And he called Adam. I don't even know how that conversation happened, but he convinced Adam it'd be fun.
Yeah, I don't worthwhile. Really know how it happened either. I was in St. Louis visiting family, and he called, and I was in a bar visiting family, I'll say that, and I was just a tad bit intoxicated, and he called.
He called you at the right time.
He called at the absolute right time. and when he made it sound so appealing, and I was already in a great mood, and just happy to hear his voice, you know. And I thought, oh, I'm halfway to Chicago already. I'm in St. Louis, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a few more hours and I'm
it's
there.
Not far.
You know. So that happened. And then I had to call all the guys the next day. By the way, we're going to play in Chicago.
I told Joshy we'd play in Chicago. Is that cool?
It was good, though. Like, it was a lot of driving for just a single gig. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we did some touristy stuff this time. We went to the Field Museum of Natural History, saw Sue the T-Rex.
Mm-hmm. That was nice.
So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. To not just hang out in the bar all day was nice. Like, went and saw some stuff, visited a craft distillery. That was neat.
And locally, folks have another chance to see you on the 16th when you're kind of helping out with the Artisphere kickoff performance.
That's true. We're playing, I believe, on Tyson Plaza in front of the Walton Arts Center as, the kickoff to the whole Artisphere event.
Was that another phone call that they just happened to catch you at the right time?
Well, I sometimes work at the Walton Arts Center.
Okay.
And can't think of the woman's name right now. But my boss, Pete Croken, called me in his office. He was like, hey, you guys playing gigs again? I was like, not allegedly, maybe. I don't know. He's like, because we want you to play the Artisphere thing. I was like, I'll see if the guys want to do it. And it's at home. Like, hometown shows are always, like, easy. And we also are playing that Sunday for the Block Street Block Party. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, if we already playing, might as well play twice that weekend for hometown show. So it should be fun.
And we got real burned out. All of us did a couple of years ago. And, hey, that's kind of fun again, you know. Well, it's nice to we did get burned out. I mean, when you're traveling that much and playing, you know, these two guys sitting on either side of me, I know better than, you know, my own family, my brothers, you know, very close. And just because you're forced to spend so much time together, you know. But you were just saying it.
It's kind of fun again.
Oh, it's kind of fun again. Thank you. I know it was right there.
Yeah, when it got to the point of being work and it wasn't, like you said, lucrative, there wasn't enough money. It wasn't a living. It was a lifestyle. And we kind of had to keep doing it. Like, we had a momentum going. And also, we would, you know, we'd have obligations. We'd be like, yes, we're definitely going to tour with you as a band and go to your town or just, like, return favors and continually just keep, you know, I don't know, halfway road tripping all the time.
Yeah.
And now that we're home, it's we can work, sleep in our own beds, and we actually still see each other every day. We're just not stuck in the van. We don't have to hang out if we don't want to. But Nathan and I have a wood shop with a couple other guys, and Adam drives his mobile mechanic truck into the drive and hangs out with us pretty much every day.
It's just nice to play music for fun again. You know, I know when we first started,
that's the deal.
However many years ago that was, you know, walking into Maxine's, full circle here, walking into Maxine's and playing songs was a blast. I had so much fun. We laughed hysterically and just had a good time. And, you know, you get a little jaded after a while of it becoming more or less work, you know, in your job. So to come full circle around and have fun at it again is pretty fantastic, you know. It's great.
Well, are there any other upcoming performances we can look forward to, or should people just kind of follow you guys on Facebook and see what happens?
We don't really play shows anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So it may happen.
We might see us around. I don't know.
We might accidentally show up and play a gig, but
yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, you brought your instruments, so would you like to accidentally play inside our studio?
Yeah, I suppose so. This is Bumming Around.
From Tennessee, he got a one-way ticket.
job. He tried everything he could, and he did what they said he should. But I saw Arkansas take it all. He said, oh Lord, take my pain. A sign for downtown, just looking for some work. She needed a little perk, but I saw society just to let her be. And she said, oh Lord, I'm taking my pain. Oh Lord, I got nowhere to stay. Oh Lord, just a bumming around the town across this land. I gotta see the beauty the best I can. But I look to the east and I look to the west, and every chain has raped your land the best they can. We all sing, oh Lord, I'm taking my pay. Oh Lord, I got nowhere to stay. Oh Lord, just a bumming around.
That was Mark Landry, Adam Cox, and Nathan Miller from Cletus Got Shot. They paid a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week. The trio will be performing at 5:30 p.m. May 16th at Walton Arts Center's Tyson Plaza as part of the 2014 Artisphere Celebration, and at 8 p.m. May 18th at the Block Street Block Party. For more information, search for Cletus Got Shot on Facebook. To hear another song from the band, tune into Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9 here on KUAF.
KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information.
Walton Arts Center presents the Trey McIntyre Project May 16th as part of the 10x10 Art Series. The innovative dance company returns, and artistic director Trey McIntyre will present his new ballet set to chamber music. Tickets and information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Beaver Dam.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. And let's see, this weekend, roughly a billion and a half things going on in the area. One I know is something you've gone to in the past, Demolition Derby.
Right, that's happening at the Rodeo of the Ozarks in Springdale. I'm not going to be able to make it this year, but it was a good time when we went, I don't know, a couple of years back.
All right, well. Yeah. To all you drivers in the Demolition Derby, I would say drive safely, but that's not the point,
that's
right?
That's not the point. Okay. Drive smart.
That's right. Christina Thomas and I will have Weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9. You'll be back by yourself on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Have a great weekend.